Hi, Babooba.
That is not for air, Wendy. That's private. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the internet portion of our show. Only the stream can contain us. Nothing else can contain us. Certainly not regular terrestrial radio. So for the next hour, Wendy and I come on, and we talk about things. And if you want to call in, please do. I don't have the number.
312-235-2525. I love how honest you are.
I don't have it. Kevin only said our budget is such that he can only make one copy of the number per day, so he gives that to you, and rightfully so. You're the keeper of the magic number.
I just got a tattoo on my inner wrist that says 312-235-2525.
Perfect, perfect. Rick Rand joins us right now. Rick is a World's Fair historian and knows more stuff about stuff than anybody I've ever met. Also, Rick, you're kind enough to bring us gifts every time. You don't have to do that, but you've outdone yourself today with what you've brought for both Wendy and myself. First of all, thank you, and we're thrilled that you're here.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Whenever I listen to you during the year, I'm like, wow, he mentioned, this is the second time you mentioned Claudine Longet.
Yep.
It's like, oh, my God.
I love Claudine Longet, the former wife of Andy Williams, and a singer from France who I thought was just incredibly beautiful. And you were kind enough to bring me a record album that Claudine Longet put out sometime in the late 60s. I want to say about 67 or 68, maybe.
I remember that release. She's beautiful.
Stunning. Just a beautiful, beautiful
woman.
You're
going to hang that on the ceiling over your bed?
I'm going to have a giant wallet made and carry it in my wallet wherever I go.
Good idea.
So thank you for that. Her eyes are mesmerizing, so if I doze off during the show, it's because she's hypnotized me. And Wendy, you also got something incredibly cool.
An old Tiger Beat magazine, and I have to tell you, Rick mentioned that we were talking about David Cassidy,
right.
And we talked to him and were worried about him. So it features David Cassidy and my other love, Donny Osmond, on the back. And there's a Donny Osmond poster, so I will be hanging that up. Thank you very much, Rick.
So nice of you. Now, where do you find these things? How do you have access to all these things?
I've been collecting and dealing in rock and roll memorabilia for almost 40 years now. And there's just stuff I've piled up. The Longet album I had to go find somewhere I'm looking through. Wow, that'd be perfect.
Oh, so perfect.
Some things I just have laying around and...
So
I was out there looking.
In that business, in the memorabilia business, right now we're going through a resurgence where people just, they want to go back in time. What are the more popular items right now? What are the things that everyone's clamoring to find?
Well, of course, Star Wars. It's just as the kids that were 15, 10 to 20 years ago, now they have a little bit more money. Mm-hmm. I remember... my son, we were cleaning out at the attic, and we sold his Turtles blimp, and a kid bought it from me.
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Right, right. The blimp, and he was like, wow, this is great. You know, my parents couldn't afford this for me when I was a kid, but now I get it, you know.
I don't think he's going to get all the use out of it now as an adult.
No, but, you know,
but
it brings back memories.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So my question to you is, how can you part with all this stuff?
Well, because I have so much of it.
Is that what it is?
I mean, I collect the 1933 World's Fair stuff. I collect stuff on the Metropolitan car, the Nash Metropolitan. There's so much stuff I collect, you know, other stuff I just have extras of.
Is your house like a museum?
Worse than that. Yeah,
a messy museum?
Most of it's stored. Most of it's stored because there's nowhere to display it all.
It's always amazing to me to see something. I'll give you the quick example. The first year that Hot Wheels cars came out, it was 1969, and they sold for 97 cents each. And a lady at Tops said to my mom, buy these up and keep them in the package because they're going to be worth a fortune. They were 97 cents. And we did it to a couple of cars. I have some of those original ones. But some of those 97-cent cars are now worth $300, $400, and
$500.
Honestly?
Yeah, I think aren't those the ones that you want, the red lines. The red line wheels.
Yeah.
Yeah, those. It's amazing because it's some of these toys people are just crazy for.
What
yeah.
happened to Beanie Babies?
See, it's weird because that's the opposite end of the spectrum. People were hoarding those going, this is going to pay for my kids' college.
They were stuff that's come out where they say it's going to be collectible from the beginning. Usually it goes and then it crashes.
Right, right. You have to almost have insider information somehow, which is impossible. But, yeah, stuff like the Beanie Babies that everybody goes, I'll put some away.
And I would have thought the Beanie Babies would have been more tradable and valuable than a Hot Wheels car.
You would think.
Right.
But
right.
No.
Everyone bought them.
That's what it is.
Were you like this as a kid? Were you a pack rat?
Yeah, I've been collecting comics since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you still have the same ones from your childhood?
Yeah, yeah. Well, not all of them, but I have, you know, a good collection of Batman. Pretty many of
them.
Most
cool?
of them from 1940 up.
And what does it do to you when you see them again? You become a kid again. It's like a time machine,
cool.
isn't it?
It's cool to see them and remember, you know, collecting them. And
yeah. Yep.
Do
yep.
you read them? Do you display them? Do you ever look at them?
Well, you can't display them because the light will destroy.
Because the light will
The colors will tarnish.
Can't you get that UV protective glass to put them in or something?
You probably could. Well, actually, what they do with some comics is they seal them now. So you can't even open them up.
Right.
I mean, you can see them,
right.
but you can't actually look inside. That's crazy. I mean,
right.
I think that's crazy, but that's how they grade them and seal them. It's,
you know, at my house, my family lovingly refers to what I have, that collector mentality, as my sickness. It's daddy's sickness. He just keeps collecting this stuff, but something's wrong with him. But when you meet other people with that same kind of passion, you almost can't help but hitting it off, right?
Well, your wife probably doesn't mind. You know, it's better than drugs, women, and booze, I guess.
That's
well, she
exactly
used to say that, but then she figured out one time, she said, you know, if it was drugs and women and booze, we'd have a lot more money because I wouldn't have spent as much on the drugs and the women and the booze as on the toys.
It starts out slow, like your collecting did, and then
yeah.
it builds up.
It's crazy.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is a gene, though. My husband collects just strictly Star Wars. I know you're all kinds of toys.
Mm-hmm.
His dad collected a lot of sports memorabilia, and now I have one son who collects guitars, which is very expensive,
mm-hmm.
and one who collects comic books, and there is a gene in there.
There's a genetic encoding.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Sure. What's your holy grail? What is the thing that you've wanted your whole life? You know it's out there, but you either can't find it or can't afford it.
Batman number one. That's the only one I'm missing.
Detective Comics, Batman number one.
Yeah, Batman number one. I got rid of a lot of my detectives to help complete my Batman set, so I have Batman number two up, you know, from like 1940 up. But just number one, I had it in my hands once. It was $100, and the cover was just like Swiss cheese. It was in horrible shape.
Oh.
I was with my son when he was about one. Didn't have the money on me, and I went back, and someone had traded for it already. But, you know... But that's like, you know, $5, $10, $15, $20, $25, $35,000 comic, you know, depending on condition.
Do you think you'll ever own it?
No, because I'm not going to spend that money, you know.
Yeah, you're realistic about it.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Win the lottery, maybe, but.
And it's kind of nice to always have that one thing or that one quest to keep you going every day. Because
sure.
what if you,
well,
know.
If you had everything and if it was too easy, it wouldn't be interesting.
That's true, isn't it? Yeah.
All right, so people listening have to attend this 23rd annual World's Fair Memorabilia Show. It's happening this Sunday. Give us the details on that.
Well, it's March 26th, this Sunday, from 10 to 4 at the Elk Grove Holiday Inn at Bussey Road and Landmeyer Road in Elk Grove Village. And at the show, we're going to have about an hour of newsreels and home movies that we show on video from the 1933 World's Fair. We have a display of 1933 World's Fair memorabilia, including stuff like what I brought in this, the last shirt made at the Reliance manufacturing exhibit. It's a Big Yank denim work shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And on the back is the names of all the women who actually put the shirt together. Isabel Anstott, Helen Bauer, Mary Sadowski, Marcella Wagner, Mabel Sexton, Ruth Nelson, Edith Fowler, Mary Bobinski, Myrtle Colford, S.E. Alford, Hazel Scarborough, and Ann Butterfield, whose relatives are probably out there. But this is someone hung on to the shirt, and it was the final shirt made at the exhibit. And at the World's Fair in 1933 in Chicago, you would actually go see, and they'd have a lot of working factories, and this was one of them, where the person, you actually saw them making the shirt. And actually, I found a scrapbook where someone described girls sitting at machines, each doing one part of the shirt. One would put two layers of blue collar pieces with a layer of cambria, just describing, and then hand it to the next person. Then you could actually buy the product right there on the table.
Oh, how about that? How about that?
This history is just really amazing.
Yeah.
And I know every time we have you up in to promote this World's Fair memorabilia show, people call and wonder if they have stuff, because a lot of times they have a grandparent or a parent who was involved with the World's Fair. Can
right.
they just bring any stuff there?
Yeah, they can bring it down and show it to us. And, you know, we can let them know what it's worth if they just want to come look and see what other people are selling. And there's stuff from all the World's Fairs, primarily 1933-34, the Chicago World's Fair, which held right in the lakefront between 12th Street and 39th Street, and then included Northerly Island, which they increased by landfill for the World's Fair.
Oh, they did, yeah.
Yeah, they did. And there's also 1893 Columbian Exposition stuff for sale, and then other World's Fairs.
All right, so here's the question I always wonder. You know this stuff inside out. You were not born in 1933 or 1934.
I was just a little kid in 33.
Oh, you were around? I didn't even think,
yeah,
think you were
80,
that old.
I am 84. No.
What?
No.
You can't
I was
be.
Born 25 years after the World's
That's
Fair.
That's what I thought.
Ended.
That's what I thought. All right, so your knowledge of it and your love for it comes from where? If you weren't around to experience it, why do you have such passion
for
it?
Well, I saw the design, some of the pamphlets, the logo of the shooting star or the spinning earth, whatever that is. And I started collecting stuff. I started reading more about it. And I just got, you know, I find something like the Reliance shirt that I got from someone. I start reading the history of that.
Yeah.
And it was just such an amazing time that it was financed without public funds because it was they planned it in 1927 to be a 100th anniversary of the city. Chicago was founded in 1833. So 1933, a century of progress. That's what it was called based on that. And they planned it in 27, but then in 29 they had the crash, so they didn't use any public funds. What they would do is they'd get some of the bigwigs in Chicago to become founder members for $1,000 each, like McCormick, all the bigwigs in Chicago. And then they also tested public sentiment by saying, you can join for $5, become a World's Fair Legion member, and then you get 10 tickets when it opens up. And they got 118,000 Chicagoans to do that. So that was another 600,000. And by the end of 1933, they still owed money on the bonds. So they continued it to 1934. And by the end of 1934, 39 million people had visited it, and they had actually turned a profit and paid back all the bondholders.
Okay.
And the extra money they had left over, they gave to area institutions like the Field Museum.
Yeah.
Why was it torn down? Why was it all...
Well, part of the reason was they didn't want decaying ruins like the 1893 World's Fair. Now you have the Museum of Science and Industry was the Palace of Fine Arts at the World's Fair. So that was a permanent building back then because it had very expensive millions of dollars of art. But all the other ones were plaster, and they just kind of decayed, and then there was a fire afterwards. So they didn't want any decayed ruins. And plus it was cheaper to build temporary buildings. They're just supposed to last 6 months from April through November of 33. So they were built without windows. They had artificial lighting. Some of them had air conditioning. That's the reason why they... And you usually only see black and white photos of the World's Fair in Chicago in 33, but actually it was a wild pastel colors. I mean, it was yellows and greens.
Yeah.
And
like
blues.
Easter eggs.
Exactly. If you see some of the color booklets, it's just amazing how beautiful it was.
So they knew the majority of the buildings were just temporary structures, with the exception, like you said, of what became the museum.
Science
and Industry? That was 1893.
Yeah.
But where they put the World's Fair, all the buildings were made to be torn down. The only things that are left are five kind of demonstration houses that after the fair in 1935, they were put on barges and on rail and taken to Beverly Shores, Indiana. The House of Tomorrow, the Weebolt's Rostone House, the Cypress Log Cabin, the Armco Faro Enamel House, and the Florida Tropical House. Four of those, three have been completely renovated, and once a year in October, you can actually go in, and they're owned by the National Park Service, but leased to people for 30 years as long as they're leased for free, but you have to spend hundreds of thousands to fix them up.
Oh.
But you can go in and you can see these houses that are right on Lake Michigan.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah.
I could listen to Rick Rand talk all day about this because what a rich history. And we all know a little, but you know everything.
I don't know everything.
Pretty
I know
close.
A lot, but there's...
When's the last time you were floored by something? Like somebody's shown you something and said, this is from the World's Fair, and you had no idea it existed. It just knocked you out to see it. It's been a while, hasn't it?
No, I mean, when this person wrote me with the shirt because his grandfather ran the booth at the fair.
Yeah.
And his grandfather's brother was the owner of the company, I think. I thought, this is amazing. I'd love to get it to be able to display it because it's a piece of history.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing what things are out there.
Yeah, I can imagine.
All right. Again, if you're interested in this, I would be interested in looking at little items, but also the footage that you said that you're going to be showing.
Right. We show the and on home video.
That's pretty
and
cool.
And on newsreels.
These are all from, or not all of them, but partially from newsreels, because they wanted to show the rest of the world what was going on here.
Oh, yeah, and they always had. The one we had was hilarious because it had this guy going through a turnstile, and he's pretty large. It must be Fat Day at the Fair. I mean, you know, it was totally politically incorrect. But it's news. The newsreels today, like Ed O'Herlihy or something like that,
yeah.
Where they, you know, they'd have the great voices and they'd talk about coming to Chicago and the World's Fair. Wow, look at that! Isn't that amazing? You'd see cars flip over. They'd say that car flips over, and you don't even see. It looks great. They push it back up, but you see water coming out of the radiator. It's like he doesn't mention that.
It's the 23rd annual World's Fair Memorabilia Show. It's happening this Sunday, March 26th. So if you're listening to this online a little bit later and it's not Sunday yet, go ahead and go. And this is located at the Elk Grove Holiday Inn, correct?
Correct.
1000 Bussey Road. It's Route 83 and Landmeyer Road in Elk Grove Village. $6 to get in, $5 for seniors over 64. And how many items would you say are being shown?
You can't even count that high, can you?
I mean, display, there's a few hundred items on display from, like, the Italian participation, but items for sale, there's literally thousands.
How fun.
That's excellent. It's Christmas for you, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah. I end up leaving with a big stack of stuff I don't need.
Oh, it's Christmas for me with my David Cassidy and Donny Osmond. Tiger B. Judy Pilek's going to fight me for it.
Yep. Look at Judy's eyes bulging.
You can't have it. Sorry, Jude.
Sorry, Jude. Rick, always fun to see you. Thank you so much.
You.
Have a great time at this. It's going to be tremendous.
A website, in case people are listening.
WorldsFairShow.com. Worlds, plural, fairshow.com.
Excellent. We'll take a quick break, then we'll get the news from Judy, then more show. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Judy. You are much more than awesome.
Yeah.
Stop it.
You're one. You know,
did
we're
David
awesome.
Tell you to say that? Did David Cassidy tell you to say that?
No. He didn't need to.
No, but, you know, a performer who I believe appeared at the World's Fair in 1933-34 is our friend Jimmy Pardo. Wasn't
Jimmy,
he there?
What are your memories of the 1933 World's Fair?
What I really remember most was Elsa the Cow and the way that this city rallied behind her even after the fire.
Embraced her almost, wouldn't you say?
They really did. I mean, if you look around that town, there's statues, there's claymation, there's a lot of stuff happening for that cow.
Sure.
And that is really what I take away from that.
Yep.
Can I tell you how fun it is? I mean, Bill's a former stand-up comic and did improv, and Jimmy Pardo is so funny. And I just love throwing stuff your way and watching you both just roll with it. It just pleases me to no end.
Well, first of all, thank you. I'd like to think I'm also more than awesome because of that.
You are.
Lady's not alone.
No, you are.
Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Wendy. It's a joy. Nothing pleases me more than when I'm told I'm going to be talking to you two.
Really?
Nothing.
Well, I mean, other things.
There's got to be a couple, Jimmy.
Top 12?
That yeah, all right. Yeah, we'll take it. Yeah, we're happy with that. Jimmy, the other day we had a guest on who's written a book about creativity, and he was saying one of the saddest aspects of creativity is that as we get older, we don't let ourselves be as creative. That whole kind of, what if this would happen? What if this would happen? That kind of goes away. But I think in our line of work, we're fortunate because we don't let that go away. Don't you think?
You can't. Nobody'd come see you.
I think so, but I think there is something too. As you get older, maybe you do less.
Yeah.
Because you might have a family. You might have, you know, obligations, so maybe you don't do the crazy things that might lead to a funny story or whatever in that regard. So maybe that's part of it, but I also agree with what you said. I'm Jimmy Pardo. Thank you for your call.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jimmy. We appreciate that. Some good news to share with everybody. The last time we had you on, you were touting your podcast-a-thon. Hard to say that in that order.
Especially if you're an Italian pizza maker, apparently. A podcast.
And I am an Italian pizza maker. So you do this every year, and it benefits. It's a cause near and dear to you. Explain again the story about why you do this podcast every year, the special one.
Podcast-a-thon is to raise money for Smile Train every year. Myself, along with my co-host, Matt Belknap and Pat Francis, we spend 12 hours. This year we did a Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank, California, and we had 28 guests. A different guest every 25 minutes came on to basically do a streaming telethon to raise money for Smile Train. And at the end of the night, everything wasn't tally, but the number that we announced was about $144,600 that we raised throughout the day.
Wow.
But I think it actually it's closer to like 160 once some auctions and stuff closed that we didn't tally in. But We'll end up getting close to about 180,000, 185,000 when everything's said and done.
That's tremendous. That's really, really nice. Don't you feel good?
I feel great, and it's great. You know, it's nice to get the credit, but the fans are the ones that donate 99% of the money, and to have people like, we were very lucky. John Cryer came by, and John Hamm came by, and Sarah Silverman, Andy Richter. And along with hysterical people like Paula Tompkins and Scott Aukerman and our buddy Paul Gilmartin, they all donate their time. And so for these people to stop by and spend, they're literally on stage for 20 minutes. They zip in, they zip out, but they're willing to do it, and it's all to benefit these children that are helped by Smile Train.
I'm proud of you for doing this.
I know, you're kind of a good guy.
That's a very
Don't
nice
let that
thing.
Get out, I know, no, but you really are. You.
Well, again, I do it with, there's Matt Belknap and Pat Francis, and there's a crew behind me. It's not all me, guys.
No, you can't. No one
But I'm the
that.
One talking to you, so I'll take it.
right.
And what about at Zany's Rosemont tomorrow night? Will that be all you?
I'm going to tell you something. That will be all me and that audience. A lot of it depends on them, but they want to sit there sitting on their hands, Wendy. They're not going to enjoy themselves. I can only meet them halfway. And you know, Bill, you know this about me. I've done this from day one. I rally everybody. Wendy, you don't know this. I'll tell you this, though.
This is secret inside information.
Before every stand-up comedy show, I grab the MC, I grab the feature act, I bring them into the green room, and I rally those guys. I go, you look out at that crowd. I don't care if there's 100 or 1,000 or 100,000 people out there. You go out there and you give them 74%.
Yep. Standard.
And we then put our hands in the middle, we do the Lord's Prayer, and it's showtime.
Yes. This is a tradition that really dates back, Jimmy, you told me, to Marlena Dietrich, and I had to look that up to see if you were telling the truth, and you were.
She was funny?
She was very funny.
You know I love the old, the classic actresses.
Yes.
I read every autobiography or biography on that.
Yes.
And Marlena had a sense of humor, Wendy, that you would not believe it by what she did on screen.
Unparalleled.
This lady liked to laugh.
Yep.
Was she bawdy?
Well, one would say she was before Toadie Fields.
Yes.
Oh, I loved Toadie Fields.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Wendy. So did I, but why did we? I'm not 100% convinced we should have, but I loved her.
Because it was something different. You saw a lot of men out there doing stand-up comedy and being funny,
yeah.
And she was okay to not be the prettiest girl in the room and could have fun at her own expense and at others. I thought she was really talented.
I will accept that answer. I loved her as I did most stand-ups growing up. I would watch anybody and appreciated what they were doing, including the great Toadie Fields.
Yes. The other day, I read a thing about the 9 women who changed the face of comedy, and Toadie Fields was mentioned on there.
As she should have been.
As she should be. As was Lily Tomlin, as was Phyllis Diller.
I loved Phyllis Diller, too.
Yeah. The 3 women that were in the original seasons of Saturday Night Live were all mentioned. I'm trying to think
of Gilda, Lorraine, and Jane?
No, not the 3 women that were on the show, but Ann Beats, the 3 ladies that were writers on the show.
Wow, I don't know them. I feel bad.
They didn't give it to Jane, Lorraine, and Gilda, which I would have thought was a natural. But they did give it to the 3 women behind the scenes that were writers for the show. But it was good reading, because on every one of those, you go, yeah, you can't dispute that. But Toadie Fields was mentioned in there, Jimmy.
That's pretty amazing. And this is the most press Toadie Fields has gotten, even during her career.
I know, that's sad, isn't it? That's because she wasn't, trim and lovely like everybody else.
Like you are, Jimmy.
I don't disagree with that.
You're trim and lovely. How do you keep that figure? What do you do to keep that figure?
What I do, Bill, is I get up, and you know this, I do 7 push-ups, 7 sit-ups every single day.
The 7 and 7.
The magic 7.
Jimmy's 7 and 7.
7 and 7. And by the way, I do it in 7 minutes.
What?
It's the triple 7.
That seems like a long time to just do 7 sit-ups and 7 push-ups.
You would think it is, but 7 and 7 is harder than you'd imagine.
That's roughly 1 every 30 seconds, if my math serves me right.
It's all about the form.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I may have misread this article. I should probably be doing more than that.
Yeah, Jimmy, that's not a good number at all.
And
you said also, because I said to you, when you work out like that, you got to keep hydrated, so you got to drink a lot of water. And remember what you said to me? No, bubble up. And I go, they don't even make bubble up anymore.
Dude, you missed the 7-Up joke right there.
I reported my bubble up.
He wouldn't play into it.
Really?
No. No.
He doesn't play well with others, does he? Or with himself.
Hang on. I'm not going to tolerate. Even streaming, I'm not going to tolerate that.
Nor should you.
I didn't mean it that way, you guys. You're
Jimmy,
dirty.
When you come
How do you not mean it that way? You said it that way.
You're doing your own push-ups by yourself, aren't you?
No, who else were you? That's not a group effort.
There's no team push-ups.
My son sits on my back.
Somebody has to hold your feet.
Jimmy, last time we...
Push-ups?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking sit-ups,
You're making
too.
Jimmy angry. You wouldn't like him when he's angry, Wendy.
No.
He's like the Hulk.
Bill, you know this. When I came to Hollywood, they said, the gentleman you remind us most of, on and off screen, is a young Bill Bixby.
Yes.
And I appreciated that.
Yes. That's very true. Jimmy, we just had the other day, and I was thinking of you, because we had one of the cast members from Hamilton and the wife of the guy who plays Hamilton here in Chicago. They were our guests the other day. And I was thinking about your passion for that show, for Hamilton. Why do you think you're so interested in that show? What's going on there?
You know, I love all musicals. I'm a fan of musical theater. And so when I first heard that, you know, before this, my favorites were... Les Mis, Evita, Company, and Jesus Christ Superstar.
Sure,
those
all good
would
shows.
Have been my four going into this.
Yeah.
And then I heard, I think it was Anthony Rapp, who was in Rent. He was on my podcast, and he said, you got to listen to Hamilton. And I was like, I don't know what this is. And he said, you got to listen to it. So the day that it was released, I bought it on iTunes, and I'm not kidding, literally four notes in, I'm like, done. This is
really?
The it was that quick, and... you know, we've since seen it. We saw it in New York. We saw it in Chicago. We're going to see it in San Francisco. We're going to see it here in Los Angeles. Had the pleasure of meeting Miguel, who plays Hamilton there in Chicago. He gave us a tour of the stage. He gave my son and I a nice tour.
That's who was on our show earlier.
Oh, yeah. We had him. Yeah.
Cervantes.
Oh, very nice name.
Or he had his wife on.
Well, first time it was Miguel, and then this time it was his wife.
Where's his wife coming by? What is she talking about?
She has a charity that she was behind, so we had her on. Very nice lady. Very nice.
That's very nice, and I and he was a very nice man, and the production's great. Is Wayne Brady still in it?
Wayne Brady is leaving the show.
Yeah,
he's been with it for a few months.
Engagement.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Listen, I love the theater. That show does not need to be stunt cast. That's my review on it.
That is exactly what Bill said on the air.
Yeah.
Oh, you said on the air?
Last week, yes.
And listen to this, Jimmy. They're replacing him with Byron Allen. Isn't that weird?
Oh, that's my God.
Why would you do that?
Well, the good news is, that's not stunt casting. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, but people won't go. Poor Byron Allen.
Listen, that's here's the thing about Hamilton. This show is so great, and it's so it's sold out so far in advance. You could put Byron Allen in it, and people would still go to this.
Right. You know what they just told us, Jimmy? Listen to how exciting this is. Every year at WGN, we do a Christmas show. We've done...
A radio play?
We've done It's a Wonderful Life, and what are some of the others, Wendy? I know every year a Christmas Carol comes up.
Miracle on 34th Street.
And this year we're doing Cats.
Oh, boy, on the radio.
Yeah, on the radio.
I think it's going to be phenomenal. Are you going to be Rum Tum Tugger?
I would love... If they would offer me that, I would take that in a minute.
You know, I saw that. I saw Cats in 1987, the year of our Lord. And
yes.
It's when I lived in Pasadena, California, and my... let me finish this sentence. My dance instructor... Yep, you heard that.
We may have to come back to that part of the story, by the way.
There's not much to it, but right. My dance instructor was in the cast of Cats at the Dorothy Chandler here in Los Angeles.
Oh.
So... He gets us great tickets to go see Cats, and I immediately, because it may be the worst show in the history of Broadway, fell asleep, and I knew a cast member.
Oh, that's bad.
Jimmy, right now, Andrew Lloyd Webber has come into the studio looking rather cross.
Well, that's him happy.
He always looks like that? All right.
Doesn't he always look a little bit like a Hirschfeld drawing?
Yeah, he looks a little upset. Andrew Lloyd Webber tends to look upset. Now, you said you had a dance instructor. How would that come into be? What would happen then?
When I moved to Pasadena in 86, I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts for a year.
Yeah.
And one of the classes that you had to take, I think it was twice a week, you had to take movement, which they called it movement, you know, because, you know, you got to move on stage. You got to be loose.
Sure.
But it was really a dance class. So you had to take it. And I was laughable. That's how bad I was. Just embarrassingly bad. Like, I couldn't do it, the simplest of steps. But I had to go twice a week because it was part of the curriculum. It was horrible.
Did you get better? Please tell me you got better.
Oh, God, no. No.
Jimmy, you know what my mom did for a living, right?
Your mom taught dance.
She had a dance studio. So she,
you know what? Bill can't do it all.
I can't dance at all.
And you know who else can't? Phil Collins.
No, well, he sings a song about it, doesn't he?
He so can't dance, he put it to music.
That's a testament to how poorly he dances.
That's exactly right.
And he was in some of my mom's dance classes, and my mom said to Phil Collins, she used to call him Charlie Brown because she couldn't tell the difference between Phil Collins and Charlie Brown.
God,
she
listen
goes,
to
Charlie Brown, you can't dance. Good grief.
You two have brought down Byron Allen, Phil Collins, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
We're just
who
getting
else
started,
we going
Wendy.
On?
We're just getting started.
Oy.
I will tell you this. I love, of all three of those people, I like them all, believe it or not. They're all nice people, and I've only met one. I've met Byron Allen, who could not be a nicer man.
Oh, you hate to hear that.
He could be funnier, though.
I know, don't you? You nailed that on the head.
Listen, I wanted to like him. He seems very pleasant, and I watched that stupid Byron Allen show that was on TV, and he shouldn't have been hosting the Byron Allen show.
Do you know, for a Byron while... Oh, go on, Jimmy.
No, I was going to say, he just... Byron Allen is a gazillionaire, and... He's made it work. He's made it work.
How?
Listen.
If you couldn't get Arsenio Hall, right? If there was a time, if you couldn't get Arsenio Hall, you make a call to Byron Allen and he shows up. Now, for a while on my resume, when I was reading for parts and stuff, on my acting resume, it said under TV work, it said that I was on 11 episodes of Kicking It with Byron Allen, which I never was on, but I just had that on my resume to see if anyone would pay attention. And once during a casting session, somebody goes, wow, 11 appearances with Byron Allen on Kicking It. You must be pretty good. And I go, yeah, well, Byron Allen. It's not going to take just anybody for 11 appearances.
No wonder you're on the radio with me every day.
Right. Right. That's true. That's very true. Is there oh, go on, Jeff.
When I first started stand-up, I would have the people intro me as, you may have seen him in the movie Shipwrecked. It was a kids movie, a Disney kids movie that I assumed nobody saw. And so nobody ever questioned it. And then one time I did the show, and it turns out, like, it was in Battle Creek. I did the show, and a guy comes up afterwards, like, hey, what were you in Shipwreck? Because my brother was the star of that movie.
You have to be careful. All right, so you said, because as Wendy pointed out, you and I have taken down some of the A-listers in show business in the last 20 minutes.
A-listers?
Yeah. E-listers. So has there been anybody, Jimmy, that you've run into there? Because in California, it's wall-to-wall celebrities. Every time you go shopping, you run into somebody famous. Have you met somebody that you were a little leery about meeting and then they turned out to be okay?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know about leery. In the last, let's call it 6 or 7 months, I've just met Tom Bergeron.
Oh, you did? How was that?
And he was the nicest guy in the world.
Was he really?
And funny and charming and everything that you expect from Tom Bergeron, that's who he was.
I'm not surprised.
He does a great job at what he does.
He hosts,
can I say that?
For people who don't know who Tom Bergeron is,
he hosts everything.
Every show that's on TV. Everything. He hosts our show.
And he does them live.
Yeah.
He's doing live television with that dance. I mean, it's fascinating what he does, and he's great at it.
He was on, now people know him now from Dancing with the Stars, but when they brought back Hollywood Squares and they kept trying out different hosts, he was the best of the ones they tried out.
And America's Funniest Videos, yep. He took over from Saget,
yeah.
I think.
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Took that over from Saget, then yeah, he hosted, I think Hollywood Squares might have lasted like 7 years, 8 years?
Something like that.
He's really good. I didn't realize that's live improv right there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. And, yeah, he came on. If you ever get him on, and I insist that your producer, Kevin, try to get Tom Bergeron.
Kevin, get us Tom Bergeron. Kevin is.
Listen, you can do that. You're on there. You're on the blowtorch. You can take care of this.
Sure, yeah.
He tells a story about calling up Larry Fine and then Mo Howard on the telephone. And when he was a kid, and it's the greatest, in my opinion, the greatest story. And I almost tell it, I wish it was mine. I love it so much.
Why don't you tell it like an actor in Shipwrecked would have told it?
How would that sound?
Oh, that would be like going, I was just kind of in the background. I was just in the background, a guy holding the rope.
That's excellent. That's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
One of the times I was working out in Los Angeles, for some reason, we would use Jim J. Bullock's name as a punchline all the time. We'd go, you know who'd be great in that movie? Jim J. Bullock. Like, that was like the in thing to make fun of. So then, right. After doing that for 3 or 4 days, we went into a frozen yogurt shop, and there's Jim J. Bullock. And both my friend and I were like, I can't even talk to him.
What do you say?
We've been mentioning his name in vain for the last 3 days. We can't even say to him. But we finally did. We just went over and we go, Mr. Bullock, enjoy your work very much. And we questioned his choice of flavors of frozen yogurt, which he was fine with.
Doesn't he spell his name weird? You explained this to me before.
Yeah, for a while, Jim J. Bullock spelled his name just the letter J and the letter M.
There was no I.
Yeah, he didn't use the I. There's no I
got
in
places to go.
Right. There's no I in Jim. There's no I in Jim.
That's not how you spell Jim. And I looked it up because, of course, I didn't believe Bill Jimmy. And you were
yeah.
accurate.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong. That does sound like one of the dumb things Bill would make up. Just
I know.
But, Wendy, how do I spell my name in deference to Jim J. Bullock?
B-L.
B-L. I don't use the I or right. the other L. Wasteful.
We get right to it.
Yep.
Actually, it's your initials, so that's
oh, maybe that's
do.
Why. I forget. Oh, I forget the reason, Jimmy.
You know it's BL. You forget why you're doing it, but you do it. Yeah.
I lose track of the reason, though. Jimmy,
hang on, I'm dying.
Let's.
Oh, sip of water, guys. I just got done doing that 777 thing, so I'm a little. I need some water.
Are you winded?
I think it's so funny.
It sounds like you guys have never tried to do 7 push-ups and 7 sit-ups within 7 minutes. That's not that easy.
No, it takes a lot. It takes a lot out of you.
I got to be honest with you. I'm not, I can't do push-ups very well. I tried to go against Bill. I think I did 1.5.
Yeah.
I could do 7 and 7 in 7 minutes. So you got
to
up it.
I bet you it would be hard to do. I'm not, it's like, even if you're good at those two things, I think it would be hard to make that last that long. Like, you would really have to hold it up there for like 40 seconds.
Sure.
That's the form you're looking for. That works all your muscles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So you're planking and push-upping
yes.
at the same time.
Now, do you remember your how you challenged me with the push-ups?
No,
do you remember the challenge?
I don't remember.
You said anyone could do regular push-ups, but you can't do the clapping push-ups. And then I did. I think I did 20 of them.
I don't know.
Wait a second. Slow down. I'm on the phone, so I can't see your face.
No, there's video on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kevin, did he do 20? I don't think he did.
Yeah. Do they call them military push-ups? Is that what they call them? Because I had to join the military so I wouldn't get arrested, Jimmy, when I did them. Because I didn't want to be in jail again.
Well, that makes sense. You know, safety first, especially what this country is going through right now. You don't know who's going to be in, who's going to be out.
Boy,
that's smart, Bill.
Sure words never spoken. So true.
Bill left. Genius. Modern day genius.
Thank you.
I'm begging you guys to, now I'm going to ask. Bill, you're telling me you did 20 clapping push-ups.
Correct.
Kevin, do you remember how many? Because I think he
wasn't with the show at the time.
Oh, okay.
This is when Stephanie was producing.
You did. It was pretty impressive, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you.
Bill, I have a question, follow-up on this. Is that the reason Stephanie left?
It's to be honest with you, it's one of the reasons.
Yeah.
It's not the only reason, but it's among the reasons. Yeah.
All right.
Because, there was too much what she calls adrenaline. She goes, this is too much adrenaline.
After you did it, you turned into like that guy from Full Metal Jacket. So it
was
not very pleasant to be around you.
Right.
He turned into Arlie Ermey.
Yes.
I can't say his name.
Arlie Ermey.
Yes. Yes.
There we go.
Who also spelled his name just the letters J and M, which doesn't, why would that be? That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. At all.
What other than this, other than your appearance at Zany's in Rosemont tomorrow, Jimmy, what are you most looking forward to in your life right now?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, I got my fantasy baseball draft on Saturday.
Now, that's a sore spot with me because you and I used to be in the same league.
Yeah, you left.
I had to leave to train for my military push-ups.
That's why you left.
That's the reason I left.
That's why I was so surprised by 20. I remember between every pick you do 5, so 20 surprises me.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You would call out her name. You would go like, "I'll take outfielder Chet Lemon," and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then next guy would do their pick.
Right.
What a weird draft day you guys had. Most guys drink during it. You guys do push-ups.
Yeah, we were very physically responsible.
Yeah, we stay fit.
Yeah.
Good for you guys.
Absolutely.
You can go see Jimmy Pardo. Much of what you just heard over the last 20 minutes will be rehashed during his show tomorrow. So if you missed any of it, Jimmy will do transcripts of that at Zany's in Rosemont tomorrow night. Visit his website, jimmypardo.com, for all sorts of fun. Jimmy, it's fun to talk to you. Thanks for being here.
It's always a pleasure. I thank you guys. Have a great day and weekend.
Thank you,
all right,
Jimmy.
We will. That's Jimmy Pardo.
Bye-bye.
We'll take a quick break. And then we'll find out what's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we have a problem.
What's wrong, Wendy?
Well, we both have to get out of here, and we have to do a promo for tomorrow.
You know how we can do it? Kevin, can you just stop this music for a little bit? Yeah, that's better. All right, so promo for tomorrow's show?
Yes.
Boy, this is the laziest thing in the stream.
I know, but you know what? It's the stream. We have to go.
All right. What time is our guest on tomorrow?
He is on. Hold on, I got to pull it up here.
This is a little behind the scenes. This is what we typically do after the show, but I got to get a kid to a high school physical.
And then you're doing that, and then after the show, I typically work on a sticker fund book in the office for about 20 minutes, so you get to hear that, everybody.
11:35. Yeah, he'll be on 11:35.
Okay. All right.
All right, Walker Stalker Con is coming to town, and we are going to have someone from The Walking Dead.
At 11:35, Ross Marquand, who plays Aaron, will be on.
I will bite him.
You bite most of our guests. How will this be different from the other guests? You bit Judy Pilak. It's the reason she left during the news. That was rude.
I can't help myself. Can't I'm a biter.
You can't just be biting guests. That's why we're on the internet, because of your biting.
Is that our punishment?
Yeah, that's what they do.
All right, you can use the beginning of that, Kevin.
Ross Marquand from, he really is one of the breakout characters. He's a lot of fun to watch, and he does incredible impressions. I saw him on TV one night doing impressions. He's really good.
Well, that I'm interested in hearing.
Yeah.
He's really good.
So he'll do celebrities being bitten by you.
Right.
He'll go, what would it be like if Robert Duvall was bitten by Wendy? It might go a little something like this.
I can't wait till tomorrow now. We better go because we got to make way for what?
After us is nothing. So please enjoy the nothing, and then we're on again tomorrow from 12 to noon. So listen in then. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, Bill.
Bye, Wendy.